Hi there, my name is Prakash Chandran, and this is a Pfizer podcast series. Have you ever wondered why young people seem to be just fine outside a chilly football game wearing less clothes than sensible? Can the difference between white and brown adipose tissue help explain this phenomenon? We'll find out from Dr. Lou Aroney in this episode. Dr. Aroney, what are some common questions you receive about adipose tissue?
So one question was about adipose tissue and brown adipose tissue. What's the difference between them? And they're pretty simple. When you know a lot about adipose tissue, which I don't, people say it's totally obvious what the difference is. White adipose tissue is one giant lipid droplet. Brown, on the other hand, is multiple lipid droplets, has a lot of mitochondria in it. And those mitochondria contain iron, and that's what gives them the brown color. So the key distinguishing point, brown versus white, is the amount of mitochondria and iron in the mitochondria, which means that there's a way to generate energy. It's much easier to generate energy. So rather than storage, it's really a place where you generate heat. There are a few sympathetic nerves innervating white adipose tissue, but brown adipose tissue has many sympathetic nerves. Again, that's because it's really an energy or heat generating location.
White adipose tissue is located subcutaneously as well as inside the abdomen. And that fat, which is known as visceral fat, is in a different circulation.
Fat inside the abdomen is in portal circulation rather than the peripheral circulation. Whereas brown adipose tissue is located around the neck and in the back, so that if you ever have been out in the cold and you start sweating around your neck and your back gets really sweaty, that's from brown adipose tissue trying to heat you up. The role of white adipose tissue used to be thought to only, its sole role was to store excess calories as lipid, as triglyceride. But we now know that it's a very important hormonal factory. So many, many, many hormones, dozens of hormones, are produced by white adipose tissue.
As fat cells expand, the production of some hormones is stimulated and the production of other hormones is suppressed. The major role of brown adipose tissue is to make heat when you're cold to keep your body temperature stable. Babies have the most abundant brown adipose tissue, and that's so that if they're not protected from cold, their body temperature will stay stable.
They don't shiver. Their brown adipose tissue just gets upregulated, making heat. And they say this is, if you look at young men who go out in the cold and they're not wearing their shirt, I mean, young guys are known for going out in cold weather without a shirt on. If you've ever watched a football game, you know what I'm talking about. Like these guys out there with no shirts on, how do they do that? It's because they have a lot of brown adipose tissue to keep them warm. And then the white adipose tissue, depending upon the location, can either increase metabolic or cardiometabolic risk or not. So white adipose tissue around the abdomen and inside the abdominal cavity, right, in the portal circulation, increases risk, where fat on the hips and thighs does not. And brown adipose tissue is a much deeper fat store, which is harder to access, and it's preferentially mobilized during breastfeeding. Brown adipose tissue has no metabolic risk. So those are the basic differences. Interestingly, some people think that brown adipose tissue is derived from muscle cells, that's really the derivation of brown adipose tissue. So it's kind of a semi-muscle cell that's used for energy generation. So for a long time, it was thought that white adipose tissue was purely a storage form for calories. But it's very clear that that is not the case. And when we think about the pathology associated with obesity, all 200 illnesses, most of them come from the hormones that are produced by white adipose tissue. And what I've said for many years is that the reason that obesity is such a powerful cause or driver of these illnesses is because you have so many hormones being produced at the same time. So people have talked about cancer, for example, as being caused by multiple hits, that just one injury or one genetic issue doesn't cause cancer to occur. You need multiple things happening, and the jury is still out on those ideas. But with an increase in adipose tissue, you get many of these problems. So think about breast cancer, which has been associated with high levels of insulin, high levels of estrogen, high levels of inflammatory hormones like leptin. And you get all of those with an increase in adipose tissue in people who are genetically predisposed to it. You could see how it's maybe more likely to develop breast cancer if you have all those factors involved. And when we look at all the illnesses, we realize that these hormones are critical to the normal functioning of the body. But if they're present in excess, that's where these diseases come from. And again, when you get multiple hits to a system, you can wind up with some of the very complex diseases that we now know are more common in people with obesity. Some of the ones that have popped up over the past couple of years that have been very interesting are things like CCL2. That's the CC ligand. The CC ligand is produced by adipose tissue. And what it does is it grabs onto and activates white blood cells and has them turn into macrophages. And it's believed that part of its role is to take excess lipid and sort of mop it up. So it's kind of like cleaning up the oil spill, if you will, of fat that's leaking out of fat cells that can't hold all the lipid that your body's trying to push into it. But what that does is triggers chronic inflammation, because as the white cells get activated and as macrophages get produced, this triggers more and more inflammation, not just in the fat cells, but elsewhere in the body. So there is a construct called crown-like structures, which was described a number of years ago, which has turned out to be macrophages encircling an adipocyte. And these are seen in inflamed adipose tissue. So it's turned out to be one of the pathologic findings that is now looked for. And originally it was noticed in cardiovascular disease, but we now, and so the question was, how are the crown-like structures associated with people who have cardiovascular disease? And we now know it's inflamed fat. And that triggers all of the components of inflammation, raises C-reactive protein, and then sets off a number of these other inflammatory hormones. So that's one of the more interesting ones. The other one is adiponectin, which normally, as you'll see, adiponectin is protective against cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. But with an increase in body fat mass, it goes down. I mean, how crazy is that? It's suppressed by an increase in the size of adipocytes. So I've always said that if you want the evidence that too much fat is not good for you, is unhealthy, there's the perfect example. Like the one thing that does good stuff goes in the wrong direction as fat mass expands. So when we think about what is going on in the underlying systems, I believe that we've been spending our time treating complications of obesity when we are treating the comorbid conditions that we spend most of our time treating in internal medicine. So we use blood pressure medicines, diabetes meds, lipid modifiers, antiplatelet agents. I mean, this is kind of the classic patient who we see who's got a BMI of 38 and they have heart disease, hypertension, prediabetes or diabetes and hyperlipidemia. And we have them on meds for all these problems, but the real underlying problem is obesity. Well, think about this. Trials like the Jupiter trial, which was a trial of rosuvastatin, showing that there was a reduction in cardiovascular risk and a reduction in cardiovascular endpoints, but there was an increase in A1C and the number of cases of type 2 diabetes was actually increased. So that even though rosuvastatin helps with cardiovascular outcomes and is the right thing to do, you're worsening diabetes and the risk of developing diabetes at the same time. If you treated the obesity, that would not happen. So maybe we need to rethink this whole thing. So treatment of obesity gets them all. And as we've seen with the latest generation of GLP-1s, we're getting the entire panel to improve. Or everything from blood pressure to glucose to lipids, everything improves. Now, when we look at the things that we don't treat when we're treating a metabolic risk, we don't treat adiponectin levels, right? So obesity suppresses adiponectin, it increases interleukin 6, increases TNF alpha, increases PAI1, which is a pro-atherogenic and pro-thrombotic, right? So we have inflammation, insulin sensitivity, and thrombosis in these. And there are no treatments for them. There are no treatments for them. So when you look at the excess risk, when we're treating cardiometabolic disease by treating all the known risk factors, I would contend that the reason we don't get the results the way we want them to be, which is to totally eliminate cardiometabolic risk, is because we're not managing problems like that. An old study of Qsymia, a combination of phentermine and topiramate, showing that with the weight loss you saw with that, which is about 10% body weight loss, there was a highly significant reduction in C-reactive protein, so overall inflammation, fibrinogen, and adiponectin. So all of the factors that we are looking for, including ones that are kind of below the surface that aren't treated by anything that we have, get better as a result of the use of treatment for obesity. So my hope is that's where we're going to be headed.
In Dr. Aroney's original presentation, he shared a slide showing increased fat stores and the association with increased expression of many hormones and cytokines and suppression of adiponectin. Some examples are increased angiotensinogen, which could impact hypertension, increased free fatty acids and insulin, which may be associated with dyslipidemia and diabetes, and increased levels of several inflammatory mediators like TNF-alpha and IL-6. Check out the link in the show notes if you want to see it. Now that you know a little bit more about the peripheral changes, tune into the next episode to hear how the brain is involved. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Pfizer Podcast Series. My name is Prakash Chandran, and we'll talk next time.